Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion about it's the opening two-parter of Season 8 of Hawaii Five-0, the original series from 1968. These episodes aired, what did we say, September 12th?
1975.
I'm going to be up front and say we picked these two as a symbolic representation, but maybe not the exact episode we were targeting. Because honestly, I don't know which that would be.
Dad never told us the exact episode or the title. And I knew within 2 or 3 minutes this wasn't the episode. Because Dad outranked McGarrett.
So, little background. Our dad was in the Navy. And one of the jobs he held was being one of the guys in the public affairs office that was in charge of blessing for the Navy scripts for TV shows and movies and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's told us a story about how he'd done that for Hawaii Five-0, had actually gone out to Hawaii.
Yeah, on rare occasions, he would be invited to the set. And instead of kind of blessing the script, which had already gone through the department, it was, we want someone from public affairs to come to the set and to look it over and to make sure we are representing the Navy to the best of our ability as civilians.
Well, and while this may not have been the episode Dad worked on, it clearly had a heavy involvement from the Navy.
Oh, yeah.
And had somebody like Dad.
Yes.
In that kind of a role, because they were on ships using Navy helicopters, Navy cars, and all kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah.
They even had a sequence where McGarrett, who's a naval reservist, I guess.
Yes.
Has to go from one ship to another. They get the two ships kind of in parallel, shoot the line across, have the basket, you know, kind of cart them across.
The basket that pseudo-zip lines and kind of gets stuck halfway between the ships in the low point.
Well, it lines. I wouldn't say it zips.
Yes.
And it's this big neon orange thing. It's like, are you going to misplace it between you and the other ship? How much traffic is there?
Well, I'm sitting there going, how much do you like the officer? Because if you don't like him, this could take a while.
Or it could be a dunking booth.
It came close.
I've seen episodes of the original Hawaii Five-0 before.
Mm. We grew up on it.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, it would have been as kids. And the thing lasted 12 seasons. And like I said, this is the start of the 8th. I don't have tons of memories of it.
My memories are kind of the vague, you know, the Bookum Dano and the, I don't want to say the cliche, but the classic moments.
Yeah, the taglines and stuff. But I think that would have been almost more in reruns than first watch.
Probably.
Because when this aired, you were, but you weren't much. You were a year or two old?
Yeah.
So, and even for me, I would have at best been sitting in front of the TV. I doubt I would have been paying a whole lot of attention. Certainly wouldn't have followed the story at that age, because I would have been, I don't know.
Five-ish.
Five or six-ish, yeah.
Mom watched the show as often as, you know, four busy kids' life allowed her to. During the time frame it was on, we're talking 68 to 75. So that's the time frame when Dad went to night school to get his second master's degree. That's the time frame when Dad did his year in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
So to say Dad missed episodes would be an understatement.
Yeah, I picked this one because I tried to do a search. I mean, they've got, again, 12 seasons.
Yeah.
And these were fairly long seasons by today's standards.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to find ones where it's like McGarrett's doing something with the Navy.
Yeah.
Because that's really about all I knew about the plot of the particular episode Dad worked on.
I've always known that the McGarrett character was reservist with the Navy. And part of why I know Mom watched the show more than Dad, and not just in terms of busy life Dad. But Mom, whenever Dad would bring it up, Mom would say, if you had asked me, I'd have told you what Jack Lord looked like. That was always, you know, a prominent part of the story. because the moral of Dad's story was always, if you're going to have advance notice, you're going to meet somebody famous, find out what they look like first. You know, but Dad had been told, we're going to fly you to Hawaii, we're going to have you go and just check out what they're doing, make sure it's going to represent the Navy well. And he got there, and Dad arrives on set, and some officer junior to him walks up to him, sees him looking around, and says, do you need help, sir? And Dad says, I'm supposed to check out the set for the Navy and just make sure everything's kosher. I'm not sure who to check in with or where to start. And the guy looks at him and says, I'm happy to give you your tour, sir. And very respectfully takes Dad around, shows him everything. And they're probably two-thirds of the way through the tour when some bigwig comes over and says, oh, Jack, I see you've met Jack.
Mm.
Well, our dad, being one of the Jacks, is kind of baffled. And the other one says, oh, I didn't have a chance to introduce myself because I was already in wardrobe. Hi, I'm sorry. I'm Jack Lord, star of the show.
Yeah. Kind of cool of him to give Dad the tour, though.
Well, and from Jack Lord's perspective, I think he was really appreciating getting the unvarnished response from Dad, who didn't know who he was, and was saying, you know, this looks good. When they're shooting, they'll have to make sure not to capture this or to capture that.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. But going back to Dad's moral of the story was always, make sure you know what the person you're going to meet looks like.
The episode we watched was, again, late 1975. I figured that story had to be a few seasons before, possibly before even Dad went to Vietnam. I don't know.
Yeah.
So probably earlier in its run versus 8 seasons, which is, you know, 2/3 of the way through. In today's realm, I'm sure there are people thinking, oh, it's not that hard to find out what so-and-so looks like. You know, if you wanted to find out, like, the newer McGarrett from the newer 5-0, you go to IMDb, they've got a photo right there. How hard is it?
Oh, what a different world.
Yeah, let's roll back just to 1975, much less, I don't know, 1970 or something. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I don't even know where you would, other than watching the show.
TV Guide.
You'd have to find a TV guide that happened to have a picture of him, because they're not going to have pictures of everybody on every show.
Yeah, well, exactly. But you would have to hope for an ad in TV Guide, an article in TV Guide. You know, once every couple seasons, he got the cover. So you really, TV Guide was probably the best source at that point.
I was going to say going to a library and asking, hey, have you ever seen Hawaii 5-0? I need to see what Jack Lord looks like.
Yeah.
And that's a bit of effort to go do at that point. And no guarantee you're going to have any luck, because this was, what, a decade before VCRs?
Yeah, easily.
So even if you knew, he was definitely going to be in the opening credits.
Well, let's talk about the tech that was in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Because at one point, fairly late in the episode, McGarrett wants to listen to all the recorded phone calls
characters
made.
Okay, basic plot is a guy in naval intelligence gets blown up with a letter bomb. So they're having to trace through all this happens. And we see a lot of the original events that led to the thing. But yeah, because they've had a security breach, all the phone calls in this naval officer are getting recorded. And McGarrett's like, I want to hear all of this guy's calls. And then we cut to McGarrett in an office with what looks like an ensign or something, who's there with a reel-to-reel tape deck that he's, you know, fast-forwarding, rewinding, playing the key parts. He was always hitting right on cue, too.
I was going to say, that guy had precision down, and back with reel-to-reel tapes, you kind of got to where you knew, okay, it's like an inch of tape thick on the reel is about where he had me stop last time he wanted that. And you're literally judging physical amounts of tape you can see on either the left reel or the right reel to find roughly where they're looking for. And McGarrett's calling out, you know, I want September 3rd. I want September 9th. And this poor guy's looking down at the reels like, you know that I can't just, you know, type in the date and he'll magically pop to it.
It's not like today where you would just go to the folder of all the recordings. Oh, you wanted November 14th. Okay, click there. Oh, you wanted 20 seconds in. I'll just fast forward. Yeah.
Really?
This is analog
yeah.
to the extreme.
Yeah, I mean, we had payphone. phones.
Yeah.
We had a walkie-talkie that they didn't really show because you're 8 seasons in. So they're not showing that the walkie-talkie is connected to the police dispatcher who's connected it to the phone line from a garret on the other end. But, I mean, it's just, tech flashback. It was funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's funny how many shows we watch where we're talking about the big CRT computer screens. And of course, this is a few decades before any of that would even be around.
Yeah.
So it was interesting to watch.
The show was old enough that when the concept of a mole in the government was discussed, they took the time to ask the character, "Do you know what that is?" and define it.
The character they're asking is Steve McGarrett, the head of the prestigious 5-0 task force in Hawaii, who's also a naval reservist, who's worked with intelligence officers before, and they have to explain the concept of what a mole is.
Well, because the audience is...
Well, I don't think it was sold as just for the audience.
I mean, it was cutting-edge terminology.
Well, and this, the guy who wound up being kind of the whodunit was what I would refer to as brainwashed, but the way they refer to it is narco-hypnosis.
Yes.
Because it was medically induced hypnosis. And there were just some things that...
It was pre-brainwashing as a concept in American culture.
Yeah, yeah. And even this whole mind control kind of a thing, I think this would have been early in its use in television and film.
There was no use of the phrase dead drop.
Yeah. There's been the drop and there's been the pickup, and they walk us through the entire, how does it go from somebody having the microfilm or whatever, handing it off at a drive-up bank, that guy takes it to a florist, puts it in the phone book, somebody else picks it up from the phone book at the florist, takes it to the Arizona Memorial.
And because this is a time when most of America isn't going on vacations to exotic places like Hawaii, we take the time to take part of the tour of the Arizona Memorial and hit the highlights of it.
I think some of that was done as much for the, it's a showcase of Hawaii as anything else. But yes, as we're first getting there, we're overhearing the tour of this is how the thing, why it's, you know, lower in the middle, higher at the ends. It's got these windows and, you know. I actually enjoyed that.
I did too, but that's the kind of stuff that now they would have dropped the volume on and made it almost the Peanuts Wonka 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 in the background. Because they feel like anyone can go to Hawaii if they want to go to Hawaii, and that's a distraction from what they're trying to do.
Either that, or they would have had the lead characters talk about the whole thing. Because there are some times where they do put that sort of a thing in, but not in the way they would have done it here. And the fact that we watched the whole dead drop process, you know, with a few handoffs and stuff, meant later when they were trying to, you know, chase it down to the end guy, they could kind of fast forward through that.
Mm-hmm.
We'd see the person at the bank, the guy at the bank walks over to the florist, see the other person going out of the florist, you know, and they're picking up the people as they go.
Yeah.
So it's... It's fun to watch an older procedural show when they don't have the trained audience we have now. They don't have the technology we have now. And they can't take some of the shortcuts narratively and conveniently that they can do today. You know, again, don't have cell phones. You don't really, well, they don't really have car phones. They've got the walkie-talkies and stuff and whatnot.
Well, but people would know what restaurant you were eating at and call you there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that was in place of, you know, just call them on the cell phone.
Yeah.
So some of the narrative techniques are still there. They just manifest differently.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of fun to watch that kind of stuff. And it's funny because I think both of us had read the IMDb trivia page for these two episodes before watching it. And there was a couple, oh, they didn't get this right. The guy gets a handshake when he gets on board. He should have saluted. And we're watching it, and the guy salutes, then handshakes. It's like,
mm-hmm.
I'm not in the Navy. I don't know if they would have done the handshake afterward, but they definitely did the salute. So from a naval perspective, I thought they did reasonably well.
Yeah.
You know, there was only one or two things that I think, had Dad been the one to do it, might have said, yeah, I don't know about this. But, and Dad had been upfront about this, is you can tell them, yeah, I don't know about this, but there's certain things you could say, no, you cannot take photos of this, you cannot do this. And there's others where I don't agree with the story you're telling, but it is your story to tell.
Yeah. Well, there were some where he had kind of hard and fast lines. Mm-hmm. You know, if you cross this, you're putting the Navy in a bad light. And, you know, and there's one movie we haven't done where it was they crossed a hard and fast line and he said no. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, we're not changing the script. And he said, then you're not getting Navy approval.
Yeah. Well, and again, that's the job.
Yeah.
Of that position and stuff. And I think that when they get that kind of a script that's done right and puts the Navy or whatever, you know, because this happens for other organizations too, in the right light, it could be a huge boon to them. I think Top Gun is a great example. It really mm-hmm. got people excited about, you know, Navy fighter pilots and such. And then when it's done, you know, the story is really not putting him in a good light, it could do a lot of damage.
Yeah.
So having public affairs officers looking out for that public reputation of the Navy in fiction, I think it makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Like another example where they got obviously the cooperation of the Navy and it worked, I thought, really well was The Last Ship.
Yeah, definitely.
And I thought, particularly in the early seasons, mm-hmm. they really did a terrific job on that. In the later seasons, they got to be more the super soldiers than just, you know, regular people who were in the military.
Conditions affected them.
Yes. Well, makes sense.
Yeah. Well, one of the scenes in here that I liked, and it gave the feeling that they really did go to a restaurant that catered to the Navy base, and I even had to rewind to show you what I had picked up on, was there was an area with some shelves that were just kind of perfectly set and discreetly off to the side to hold the men's caps.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you figure in parts of Hawaii, parts of San Diego, in other particular places where there's a huge Navy presence, mm-hmm. you have that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know? And it really, I think some of it depends on proximity too. You know, you're not going to have it 20 miles away, but if you're right off the base and stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you cater to the clientele. So yeah, I thought that kind of thing was interesting.
McGarrett wore about every uniform you could.
There were a couple of times I couldn't figure out why he seemed to be in the dress whites, like when they were at the restaurant. When they were at the funeral, it's like, okay, that makes sense. But his white outfit and the uniform of the other guy.
The other guy was Marines.
Still a different shade.
I agree. But that's the only thing I can come up with was the other guy was a Marine.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Because the caps were a little different and stuff like that. And yeah, Dad was in the Navy. I'd seen his uniform tons of times. I could not tell you what is correct or incorrect about naval or any really military uniform.
Well, and one of the things, and I guess it is, now that I think about it, yeah, this is how it is. It just jumped out at me as, whoa, okay. Hawaii was apparently on white uniforms and dress whites. But when they went to San Diego, they were on dress blues.
Yeah, I noticed when they did the San Diego scene, he was in a different uniform.
Yeah, but it wasn't until I just thought about it, because I noticed at the time, I'm like, he's in blues now. But that's why, because different bases, the base commander sets the uniforms.
Well, that was funny, because we had, as they did that transition, because it's like, we got to find out what happened in Hawaii. And like, McGarrett's like, I guess I'm flying to San Diego or whatever. Or actually, in Hawaii, we need to find out what's in San Diego still. So we then get this long shot of, was it a United Airlines?
It was.
Plane taking off. And it looked like a regular jet.
Yeah.
But then when he comes back, Dano's picking him up on this prop plane, kind of a big prop plane.
It's some Navy plane. Well, he flew Space A back.
Okay.
Space Available.
Ah, got it.
But apparently he had to fly civilian out because he was rushing to get out and there wasn't a Space Available flight. But what got me for San Diego was the establishing shot of the San Diego airport.
A really old one.
Yeah, I know.
Like, probably modern at the time, but that's nearly 50 years ago.
But I'm like, that really is what the San Diego airport looked like when we first started going through it.
Yeah, when we moved out there in 77, mm-hmm. we were out in the suburbs, and Dad was working at COM 11, which they had referenced here, which was downtown San Diego, right on the water. And we were inland in the suburbs, I don't know, 20 miles. But sounds the freeway right. went from, you know, the three lanes down to the two a ways before you got to our neck of the woods.
Yes.
Now it's, I kid you not, literally, if you include the express lanes, eight lanes in each direction at that point.
Uh-huh.
It's just insane how much the population's grown there.
Yeah.
But yeah, Dad did a number of different shows and movies in terms of advising for the Navy and such. And sometimes it did determine, could the production do like what they wanted to do here of getting on the ships, using the equipment mm-hmm. and the locations and stuff like that? Or did they just have to like totally fake it? Because if this episode, if they'd been turned down by the Navy, we probably could have had the same sort of story. We wouldn't have seen the ships at all. Maybe some establishing shots, but it would have been very clear they're not on them. We wouldn't have even seen the outside of some of the buildings and with the actors walking in kind of deal.
Yeah.
I mean, there are ways you can, you know, make it look like this is the building you're in with just an establishing shot of stock footage and then cut to, you know, soundstage interior.
Mm-hmm.
But again, some shows, if you don't get that support, again, Last Ship's a good example, you just can't do it.
Well, they used one of the Coast Guard vessels,
mm-hmm.
as well as they had at least one, I thought, two Navy ships at the pier, one of which we boarded.
They had at least two ships in play when he went across.
Exactly. Two Navy ships out in the water. They had, I want to say, a blue Navy helicopter. And then there at the end, the white with orange helicopter.
Yeah.
Can't recall if it was Coast Guard or Navy.
I was thinking Coast Guard, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah. We had two Navy sedans.
Mm-hmm.
And we had at least one Marine Corps sedan at the very beginning that and brought the courier. And there
was one that I thought was like a station wagon when he went to the airport.
Yes, Navy station wagon. The Navy station wagon showed up surprisingly often in Hawaii Five-O. And one of the Navy sedans at one point looked like they had put like a piece of cloth over the rear license plate. Something
to handle the rear license plate, yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of just... not just Navy cooperation, but it's, yes, you can use our equipment, which means they're not having to either rent equipment, they're not having to pay to fake up the equipment, stuff like that. One of the things Dad used to point out is you can get Navy personnel to be the extras, mm-hmm. and they bring their own uniforms instead of wardrobe having to pay for and provide uniforms.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. So it can be a huge savings to get Navy cooperation.
Well, and an air of authenticity.
Yes.
Because for all we know, at the beginning of the two-parter, when he's getting on the ship, the guy who's saluting him in or whatever may have actually been a Navy guy. I don't know.
Yeah. And well, and a lot of the extras on the last ship were actual Navy personnel.
And it wouldn't surprise me, the band we saw at the beginning of this was an actual Navy band.
Yeah.
Because again, if you got good terms between the production company and, in this case, the Navy or whatever, again, organization you're dealing with, you can get some perks because, in this case, it was the Navy having a chance to, I don't want to say show off, but put their best foot forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey, you know, we can provide a band. We can do this thing, you know, the taxi, you know, cart between the two ships. And
the Coast Guard was showing off at one point in here.
Mm-hmm.
When they had the guys lining the rails, yes. No matter how rough the water was. And I'm like, yeah, that just looks like promotional footage, guys. I mean, it was
But it fun. Is.
It is, yeah.
And if you can get that promotional footage and tell a good story at the same time, I mean, does a lot of good.
But I'm like, you're chasing the bad guys, and you are standing at ease lining the rails.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's how you chase the bad guys in real life.
Well, it was funny because when the officer guys were kind of getting on the outside to where they could get ready to jump over, I was pretty sure they got wet. And I don't think they were too happy with it. Kind of, maybe we got too early.
I'm like, guys, you're still 5 or 6 feet away at least, and you're climbing over to jump over.
Yeah.
Wait a little. Yeah.
I've watched more of the revival of 5-0 than the original, I think.
Mm.
Or at least I remember more.
Because
I watched the first couple of seasons of the new one.
Well, I know for years when 5-0 was in, the original was in reruns, mm-hmm. I watched it with Mom and Dad.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is part of why Dad's story would come up at least twice a year.
Well, again, the show's got a couple of catchphrases, Book 'em Dano and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was a 12-year run, so it went on for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the theme song is just so iconic.
Yeah. Well, it must have, like you said, been pretty early in the run because Jack Lord was only wearing a lieutenant's uniform.
Yeah, and at this point, he's a commander.
Yeah.
And he's a reservist, so I imagine you don't get bumped up that quickly.
Yeah, because Dad's like, you know, it was just a lieutenant, and he offered the tour. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and again, at that point, how would you know? One would hope that there would have been a process of, we're going to be doing it for this established show. Here's the headshots of the leads. But again...
Yeah, but so many of the things Dad worked on, he was kind of the second person, if you will. He worked under admirals.
Mm. So other people may have known and just he personally may not have.
Most of the stuff usually went to the admirals. Like a lot of the speeches he wrote, the admirals gave. There is a famous photo that I want to say was on the cover of Time. It might have been on the cover of Life, that an admiral got huge credit for getting the cardinal that was known as JFK's cardinal,
mm-hmm,
posed for this photo. Well, Dad was the one who had set up the cardinal coming. Dad was the one who'd set up the photographer who got the photo.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it was the admiral's event.
Of course.
Yeah.
Perks of the job.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and some of the stuff Dad worked on was in the formative stages, mm-hmm, of like a movie script or something like that. And he would, you know, approve or not approve of it. And it could take a number of years before it actually got shot and got made and then got out.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a lag time to be had on some of that stuff.
Well, there was one script that Dad had me pick up at one point because he had remembered reading the script, giving it approval, and that was about all he remembered. He's like, I'm pretty sure it got made. I want to say it was like a Mutiny on the Bounty or something to that effect. But he had me while I was up in L.A. and I was seeing scripts for sale. He's like, if you see, and he gave me a list of two or three. He's like, those are ones that, you know, I worked on and I gave approval. And then, you know, I have four kids at home. You know, did I make it to the theater to see movies?
Yeah. You know. And some of those, again, would have been before the days of VCRs. And even once VCRs came, he still had those four kids.
Yeah.
So when you went to run a movie, that's probably what you meant in the movie for.
Funny how that works for parents.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's had some interesting stories on that kind of stuff. And I remember him telling a time or two the basics of the Jack Lord story.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was fun to watch this. Again, I wasn't sure which specific episode it was. And man, I was having a hard time even finding which episodes of the original 5-0 dealt with a Navy-based plot.
That's interesting. I haven't been through the descriptions of those episodes in forever. I think the writing held up really well.
I think it did too. It, again, the storytelling structure is subtly different than today.
Mm-hmm.
They had a little more time to get into a couple of things. And the opening sequence, it took us a while before we even see McGarrett. But that's because we're watching the murder play out.
Yeah.
And it takes a little bit to realize, okay, this guy's the courier. He's gotten the thing. It's getting hand to him. He's, you know, getting into the intelligence office. He's giving it to the one guy. The one guy is giving it to somebody else. She's walking. And through all of this, you have no idea why we're seeing any of this.
Yeah.
And I've got half a mind, you know, it's like, if we were to rewatch that opening sequence, because when the letter or whatever gets handed off to go to the guy who gets killed, we've got this great shot where we're looking down the office way. She's heading out the back, walks off to the left. The camera is kind of panning over, goes past a wall. We're now looking through another office and she's walking out there, goes past another wall. We're now looking down the hallway. She's starting to come up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I'm not quite sure how they did all of that.
Yeah.
But it was really, you know, well done. I don't know if there was just a lack of a wall in the one spot or if they just did some strategic cuts, but it played well.
Yeah.
But it also played in a way that if you have no idea what's going on, because you haven't seen the rest of the episode yet, like, this is good. But by today's standards, it feels slow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, it was a two-parter, and this is, you know, minus commercials, of which they had a lot fewer back then.
Yeah.
Not counting the plane and a few other things where product placement inside the episode.
I found the United Airlines plane entertaining.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I really thought planes were faster than that.
I thought that was kind of funny. And again, the, do you know what a mole is? And just other things that today's audience mm-hmm. would just know.
Yeah.
But you've got to learn somehow. And it's through stories like this over and over and over again that we just take that for granted. And that becomes, I don't say cliche, but a storytelling convention at least.
But to me, it's also a change in both society and culture. In terms of, that was the Cold War. That mm-hmm. was when spies and stuff was increasing, if you will, in people's awareness.
Well, and their woe fat was a spy.
Yeah.
Whereas the one in the modern incarnation was a criminal.
Yeah.
So, again, subtle differences. I hadn't realized how many of the names from the new show had been pulled from the old. You know, Chin Ho, yeah. Woe Fat. Some stuff like that. I knew some of them. I mean, Dano and McGarrett, of course. But yeah, this was fun. I think it held up well. And, you know, again, I don't know how many episodes they did per season or whatever, but 12 season runs pretty impressive. And they could have done as many as, you know, 39 episodes a season back then,
mm-hmm.
which is even at, you know, today, well, I was going to say today's standard of 22, but that's probably a year or two out of date now. But of recent standards of 22 a year would still be pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So it was a fun thing. And again, that was something that while Dad may not have worked on this specific episode, he had worked on this specific show.
Mm-hmm.
When it came time to do a Father's Day episode, we decided to go with this one. There's a couple of other movies we're still thinking about for future years and stuff.
Yeah.
But some of it comes down to is we're ready to record. What do we feel like watching and what do we have a good story on?
Yep.
Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.